It's 6 after 9 on Monday, July 21st, 2008. Good morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, it's time for our regular Monday segment of All Things Political, and there's a lot to talk about as usual. Lots to talk about from yesterday's news programs, the Sunday talk shows, as well as plenty of things happening on the campaign trail. But one thing that happened last week that we're going to spend a considerable amount of this hour discussing is that both Barack Obama and John McCain took time to court Latino voters. Latinos represent the fastest-growing segment of the United States population, and that makes them an important target for both presidential candidates. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how the candidates are likely to do among America's working poor. And as always, we'll take your calls and emails. Here's how that works. The numbers are 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number, 800-486-8655. If you're calling us from Milwaukee, please use our local number, 414-227-2050, 227-2050. And we can be reached via email, talk@wpr.org is the address. Joining me by telephone this morning are Rodolfo Espino, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Arizona State University, and Aaron E. O'Brien, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Massachusetts Boston, and author of the book The Politics of Identity, Solidarity Building Among America's Working Poor. Good morning to both of you, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Professor Espino, let me start with you. How important is the Latino vote going to be in this fall's election?
Well, it remains to be seen. Seems like every election cycle, we've always heard about this is the election that Latino voters are going to make the difference. And pundits and political scientists alike will say they are going to make the difference. And this election cycle is no different. However, there are certain things that might make it more a higher probability that Latinos will play a critical role in this year's election, and that is namely that Barack Obama's candidacy has shifted the Electoral College map ever so slightly to make certain states a little more critical, namely some of the Mountain West states. So it's by no accident that you see Obama and McCain courting Hispanic organizations actively and also campaigning actively in states such as Nevada, Colorado, and New Mexico, because these are states that have been shifted into the Electoral College calculator and have high Hispanic populations in those states.
Well, according to the news reports, immigration seems to be the top Latino issue. Is that true? And if so, how do the candidates shape up with Latino voters on this important issue?
Well, no. First of all, I think that Hispanic voters share the same concerns over the economy in Iraq as all other voters. They're not unlike other voters in terms of that their top two issues would be solving our country's economic problems and resolving the crisis in the Middle East. Following that, of course, comes immigration. But you look at the most important problem, you know, that voters express facing the country, immigration comes maybe five or six down the list. There are other concerns such as health care and education, and that is true for Latinos. The difference between Latinos and non-Latino voters is the way in which Latino voters want this to be resolved, and they want it to be resolved in a non-confrontational way, a non-partisan way, and most especially they are tired of hearing the scapegoating. This is something that happens, it seems, you know, every 4-6 years we hear that Latinos are the problem of our economy, and voters are clamoring for politicians to do something about it, and certain politicians will pander to certain segments of the population and scapegoat Latino voters. And we saw this most notably in California with Proposition 187. We see it occurring in more states now, especially states such as Arizona. So with respect to Latino voters' concerns over immigration, they want it to be solved, but, you know, they share the same concerns as the rest of the voters out there.
The both candidates last week made speeches to Latino organizations, and each accused the other of being wrong on immigration reform. Clearly, that's top of mind for them. Give me an assessment of how you feel the two candidates are doing so far in terms of the Latino vote.
Yeah, in in making appeals to the Latino vote, you know, I think both candidates are doing the right thing by accepting invitations to these organizations. I can't remember any time in history where we've seen both the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate courting Hispanic organizations across the ideological spectrum so heavily. So this is a first for the Hispanic organizations. They feel, you know, vindicated in many ways for the years that they've been struggling to have their voices heard. Now, what Obama and McCain are trying to do with the Hispanic community is try to paint the other person as the wrong person to solve our country's immigration problem. McCain has the name recognition and the longer legislative record on trying to push forth comprehensive immigration reform, most notably with McCain-Kennedy. That ultimately has failed, and during the Republican primary campaign, he sort of backtracked on his initial stance, saying, well, you know what, I wouldn't vote for my legislation today. First comes border security. Obama is trying to paint McCain as a flip-flopper on that issue. McCain is trying to say, no, I'm supple, I'm nuanced on it. I'm responsive to voters. First comes border security, and then I push for the comprehensive immigration reform. Obama, conversely, is saying that, well, you know what, I'm a newcomer to the table. I don't have the history that McCain does. However, I still back what he initially was supporting, and I'm not going to back away from that. And that really is what I think Hispanic voters want to hear more of, is what less the border security issue and more reform issue. And that in part because for many Hispanic voters, when they hear the term border security, it brings certain memories of immigration sweeps and roundups. And this is something that Hispanic voters don't want to hear about again. It's the scapegoating.
We're talking about politics this morning. This is the All Things Political segment. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. And you are certainly welcome to join us here on the program this morning by phone or email, 800-486-8655 or 227-2050, talk@WPR.org. is our email address. Professor Espino, one more question for you, and then I want to ask Professor O'Brien to join us on another issue. But are there who are Latinos listening to? Who are the opinion makers for the Latino community?
For many Latinos, these are their local elected politicians, whether it be state assembly, state senate, or members of Congress. For many Latino voters, they're especially early on, they just didn't know who Barack Obama was. They were unfamiliar with the name. They were more familiar with Hillary Clinton, more familiar with John McCain. And they heard their Hispanic elected officials talking about these names. That's who Hispanic voters oftentimes would look to figure out how to make sense of who to vote for. Now, given Barack Obama's ascendancy, Hispanic voters, Hispanic elected officials are becoming more familiar with them, and Hispanic voters are, you're starting to see in polls, starting to move more heavily towards Barack Obama and away from Hillary Clinton and away from John McCain. So Hispanic voters will look to their elected officials because those elected officials have the same shared experiences as the Hispanic masses have had.
Professor O'Brien, what about America's working poor? Is there an issue that could unite this group and get them out to the polls for one candidate or the other?
I think attention more than anything. When we talk about the working poor, we're talking about the poor and the economically insecure that were poor before this most recent economic downturn. So I think it's important to sort of separate out that segment that, the mortgage crisis and those sorts of things are getting a lot of attention from both campaigns, and rightfully so right now, gas prices, the like. But that doesn't really tap this group that I call the working poor, those in the service economy and the like that were poor prior to this most recent economic downturn. So I think attention is what makes them most likely to turn out, because right now they don't. And most of the rhetoric, most of the language that both campaigns are using is to tap those that are formerly middle class or slipping and tend to vote. And so I think to unite the working poor, it's to really speak to their economic issues, to speak to the fact, the tax breaks or cuts, whatever you want to call them, I think offers a pretty instructive example. And that most of those who were working and poor prior to the downturn didn't get that tax break, didn't receive it at all. And that sets up a sort of system or sort of set of feelings from my own interviews that suggests that, hey, government doesn't work for me, and I might like one of these candidates a little bit better, but I don't think either of these candidates are going to make a real difference for me. So I think overt attention to those economic issues, using the language of you were poor before, you have trouble with rent, you have trouble with health care, and this isn't a recent advent. I think the candidate that's able to do that taps a really unused or underutilized resource in this campaign.
Well, it would seem to me that Senator Obama has been making a tremendous effort. His campaign has been making a tremendous effort to register new voters. Has the Obama campaign reached out at all to the poor community as you describe it, or has he been ignoring it as well?
I think he's trying to make inroads, but I think those inroads come up against some pretty rational, if you will, defense mechanisms that, every 4 years someone sort of talks to us a little bit, but not really. So I think those inroads of either campaign, I think he's doing that a little bit more. But I don't think it's resonating on the real bottom, lowest rungs of the economic ladder right now. Because the mortgage crisis, now many of the working poor do own homes and those kinds of things, or tons of attention to gas prices. Those kinds of things matter and they resonate. But it's also, it feels like, to a lot of these individuals, hey, we've been struggling for a long time. This isn't a new economic bubble. This isn't, or bust, I should say. This isn't a new phenomenon. And I think when either candidate is able to say, hey, this struggle's been going on for a while, then I think that candidate will pay dividends at the polls.
We're talking about all things political. Of course, the biggest political news in the land in general is the presidential campaign. We've got two presumptive nominees, and they're both campaigning hard. Senator Obama is currently overseas. He's made a trip to Afghanistan. He is visiting Iraq. He's going to be visiting some other places as well, trying to shore up his foreign policy credentials a little bit. And there's been some news created by his overseas trip. Meanwhile, Senator McCain is campaigning hard in the United States and doing what he can to attract both money and voters. And we'll be talking about that as this program continues. And we'll take your phone calls as well. We want to open this up to perhaps what you think is some political news that either is getting coverage and you want to talk about it, or maybe you don't think it's getting any coverage and you'd like to bring it up. Here are the numbers, 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's a local call for you, so please use 227-2050, 227-2050. And the email is talk@wpr.org. When we come back, we'll be taking your phone calls. And we'll do that when we continue. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 21 after 9, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. And here is what is coming up later on this morning on the Ideas Network. Well, after 11:45, it's the job of Larry Mueller's guest to help people achieve their personal fitness goals. That's coming up after 11:45 this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, it's all things political here on the Ideas Network, and you can join our political discussion with our two guest experts, political scientists, both of them. And you can do that by calling us at 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. And we do have callers who want to join us. Let me reintroduce my two guests before we go any further. I have Rodolfo Espino, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Arizona State University, and Aaron O'Brien, assistant professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and author of the book, The Politics of Identity, Solidarity Building Among America's Working Poor. We've got callers who want to join us on a variety of issues, and let's take Mike first from Appleton. Mike,
yeah, good morning.
I'd like to address the immigration issue. I have several points, and I would beg for a follow-up. I would like to say that I agree with Professor O'Brien. I think she hit the nail right on the head as far as the working poor. Turning to the immigration issue, I don't understand what they mean by immigration reform. The United States has got the most liberal immigration policy of any country in the world. And, in fact, I believe we allow more immigrants, legal immigrants, into the country than the combination of all of the other countries in the world who have very restrictive immigration policies. So immigration reform, I really don't know what they mean. What they mean, I think, is they want to give amnesty. And I'm a Latino voter, and I'm 100% against amnesty. I went through the process of bringing my family into the country. I waited the years I had to wait. I followed the law. I paid the fees I had to pay, the lawyers I had to pay, and I did things correctly. And I just questioned very, very heavily this idea that we're going to, give amnesty. One of your guests made the comment that the Latinos are, sick and tired of being scapegoated. But the fact of the matter is that there is a huge illegal population in this country, which overburden our schools, which overburden the health system, and we're all paying for it. And like I said, I would beg for a follow-up. Thank you.
Yes, this is Professor Spino, and I guess that question is mostly addressed towards my comments. The issue of amnesty is a word that you don't hear either of the candidates, Barack Obama or John McCain, saying, because what they're pushing for in terms of immigration reform, according to them, is not amnesty. Both of them would say amnesty is defined as giving citizenship without any conditions, and neither Barack Obama or John McCain is saying, let's give citizenship without any conditions or restrictions. Their immigration reform proposals are rather similar. They're both saying, hey, let's create pathways to citizenship, but you'd have to pay fines, you'd have to pay certain fees, you would have to get back in line and create a smoother process. The problem with our immigration lines right now is they've just been backlogged. We've been not putting enough finances into pathways to citizenship to expedite this process, and the lines have just gotten longer, and employers have been active in recruiting these workers here. So a lot of these workers that have been recruited from Mexico to the United States have been caught up in this mass chaos that we have, and what they mean by immigration reform is, let's clean up this process, let's have these people pay their fines, get in line, and create pathways to citizenship. And some of these pathways, of course, are the fines, but also service, whether it be community service, military service. Both Barack Obama and John McCain, that's what they mean by immigration reform.
I would just add into that, concur with what Professor Spino said, but also add in, I think that discussion and Mike's question speak to a real challenge for the campaign. And this is a point that was alluded to earlier, there is no Latino vote, right? Latinos in the United States are incredibly diverse. So, Mike's state that he went through this process and others should do the same is very real, as are, the workers that Professor Spino just talked about. So it's a bit of a misnomer. We've been caught up in this, identity is the campaign, one of the narratives of the campaign, it's identity politics. And this shows you how identity politics matters, but both campaigns can't take identity politics to mean, I am Latino and nothing else, and being Latino means X in the United States. It's a much more diverse experience, and campaigns do well to recognize that.
Mike, hang on for just a second. You'll get your follow-up. I just want to clear up a term first with our two professors here. When we talk about reform, we're not always talking about making something more liberal or easier. Sometimes reform can just be – we can talk about reform in terms of any change we make to any set of laws can be termed reform, can they not?
That's correct. What they mean – reform can just mean changing the status quo.
Right, but okay. It is true that for many, though not all, Latinos in the United States, that talk of immigration reform triggers red flags. and the red flags are, you know, border security being blamed for, you know, economic downturn, you know, a targeting, if you will. So while the language in its truest sense means, you know, any change from the status quo, like was just alluded to, for a lot of others, sort of makes the hair rise on the back of one's neck for many in the Hispanic community.
Yeah, and let me interject one more point. And that's why I think John McCain, I think, hit the nail on the head with his recent release of an ad entitled God's Children. It was specifically targeted the Hispanic community. He didn't mention any specific issues such as immigration, healthcare, education, the economy. What he was just saying, the message just says, hey, Latinos have served this country well, and I want to acknowledge that. I want to say thank you, and I want to keep pushing this, you know, the recognition of the Hispanic contribution to this country forward. You know, the ad pans across war memorials talking about the sacrifices and the blood that has been shed by Latinos for this country. And that's, I think that's a message that resonates across all that, you know, with all Latino all Latino voters.
Mike, go ahead with your follow-up, please.
The thing is that we're missing the point. The point here is that there's a large group of people who are here in this country illegally. Our immigration laws are fine. Now, you know, that the politicians have dropped the ball and have not enforced the laws is a different matter totally. But let me tell you, the message that you're sending to Latin America, let's talk about Latin America, is basically this. Come to this country, you know, get in any way you can, and eventually the politicians, as, you know, self-serving beings, will find a way to, you know, legalize your status here. It's not a question of paying the fine, getting back in line. The prize is to get here. Once you're here, you're scot-free, and that's wrong, because the message that is being sent to the people who did follow the rules and did obey the law and did pay everything that they were supposed to pay is you're damn fools, and that's a real bad message to send out.
Well, yeah, no, the point is taken, and I think this is what creates a problem for Barack Obama and John McCain, is they're cognizant of this message that it might send. This is why I think that they are, especially John McCain, is saying, hey, look, I want the reform, but we got to talk about security. We can't continue to allow people in here and create a problem that you're talking about. But it's not the first time that this country has had a crisis with, you know, lines of immigrants trying to become citizens. Of, you know, we can look back to 1986 when we Reagan signed the IRCA, the Immigration Reform Control Act of 1986, because we had exactly the same kind of problems today. We had a backlog of workers coming here from Central and South America wanting to work, employers wanting to hire them, but no way for them to become citizens efficiently and effectively. So what politicians are trying to do, namely Barack Obama and John McCain, is trying to speed up this process. We've had such a backlog. So I will, disagree with you, Mike, ever so slightly, that our immigration laws right now are a little bit backward in terms of how long it takes to get someone through the process. We need to have a process, but it needs to be streamlined to get people through a little bit quicker.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all on that. I waited for 3 years, but
yeah,
I did it legally.
Some
did
people
it,
are, you know, 3 years is short by today's standards.
Well, but, you know, it was still 3 years. The point is, we are or we are not a nation of laws.
Right.
And we can't adjust our laws for our political, you know, gain. That's insane. I mean, you know, why do I pay taxes to the IRS, you know?
Right.
Why don't I just say, hey, you know, it's not convenient for me to pay taxes this year. I'll go
to jail. We are a nation of laws, but laws are created by men, and men are infallible. So sometimes the laws that we create 10 years ago, imperfect for where we are today.
Well, Mike, thanks for that call. Let's move on and take another caller. This time we'll go to another Mike. This time it's Mike from Berlin. Good morning.
Hello.
Mike from Berlin, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, well, I'll ask my own question because we seem to be having some difficulties here. When we talk about issues like immigration, and Professor O'Brien, I want you to respond to this specifically. I think you got a start on it before, but when we talk about the issues like immigration, As our caller just alluded to, the numbers of workers who are here illegally. Meanwhile, we've got people in what is what we can call the working poor who are perhaps looking for jobs or having trouble finding employment. How do those issues play out in that segment of the population?
A lot of Hispanic Americans who are documented and undocumented. And so you had asked me earlier, how do you unite the working poor? Well, one of the realities is sometimes there's real tensions amongst the working poor because of, as the earlier caller was alluding to, who's documented and who's not. There's still oftentimes the sense that these individuals are taking, quote unquote, our jobs. Those kinds of things. And so, you know, like many groups in American politics, the working poor are incredibly diverse in terms of both demography, you know, what they look like, as well as political ideology takes on politics and the like. But what's unique about the group is they are unified by these very real economic struggles. And so we have seen in recent campaigns and elections and more, you know, even more so with social movement organizing and the like, that this group, when unified, is pretty quite a challenge for many candidates to take on, because it really pushes on the candidates' agendas, if you will. And doesn't fit in nicely. And we've also seen some examples recently of, you know, these progressive social movement unions taking on immigration rights and immigration issues as a part of their plank. When that happens, you've got the working poor unified around economic issues, but also taking into account how, you know, other identities inform their politics. And so, for those of us who study what we call the politics from below, politics of those who are not economically affluent, that's pretty exciting to see. And it makes for some, you know, just as Professor Spino talked about, both candidates going to various Latino organizations, the hope for many of these organizations representing the poor, understanding that that includes white people, African Americans, Latinos, et cetera, is that in the next iteration, and maybe this iteration, that both candidates or the full range of candidates need to start talking to those organizations the same way they talk to the NAACP, some of these Latino empowerment organizations, that we have to start talking to, or you have to sort of pay your dues to the economic justice groups as well. And so that's how I see this unfolding right now.
Mm-hmm. Professor O'Brien, you talked earlier about how, and I'll try and summarize what you said by just saying it seems to me that what you're saying is that the working poor feel disenfranchised, that neither candidate is really paying a lot of it, neither political party pays a whole lot of attention to them. They don't have any incentive to go to the polls because they don't see anything changing in their own circumstances. Is there an economic issue or a social justice issue or perhaps even a values type of issue that could change that, that could get the working poor to go to the polls and actually vote for somebody?
Sure. Well, the first I'll sort of answer it in the negative way. No, don't do values. Don't do those values issues. That's the diversity of the working poor. You'll start to see a lot of divisions there. But I think two pretty basic issues. And one, I mean, we just saw an increase in the federal minimum wage, but, you know, very real, but also pretty minimal on an impact level. Wages. I mean, we have the highest wealth and income inequality than, you know, immediately prior to the Depression. So if we could really talk about how wages don't cover basic bills in that sort of language, you're working harder for less. But I think that, you know, that's hard to do with the business community and so on and so forth. One issue based on my own interviews and the work of a lot of other people that it sounds sort of simple, but that's sort of its beauty in that to talk about the insecurity of these jobs. We allude to that sometimes with globalization, but we use these big fancy words that don't really say, hey, you're worried you're going to lose your job every day. And you know what? I get that. What that means is you go home and you're nervous. You're nervous when you're talking to your kids. You know, when you're worried about not having a job, your relationships suffer. To talk about that sort of anxiety that's produced by not knowing, is this job going to stick? If the candidate who can tap into that and say, I don't know all the answers, because, you know, the working poor are like everybody else. And that, you know, the candidate that has every single answer, they're rightfully questioning. But that candidate that says those anxieties and can just put it in that language, I think has a real shot. And it's not good when, and I want to be careful, I'm using the term the working poor. That does not, you know, I don't view the working poor as different than, quote unquote, the welfare poor or something like that. These are populations that are moving back and forth, oftentimes claiming some government benefits and working 40 hours a week, but then having their shifts go down to 20, those kind of things. So I'm talking about that bottom economic ladder who desire to work.
800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or 227-2050 if you're calling us from Milwaukee. Those are the numbers to use to call in on our program and talk about political issues that might be on your mind this morning. This is All Things Political, our regular Monday morning segment. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We have David from San Francisco on the line. Let's take his call right now. David, good morning.
Hey, morning. You know, I originally told your screener I was interested in talking about an incident in Iran many years ago, and it... I can still talk about it, and I'll talk about the previous thing in the same sentence. Bigots are very expensive. And when you've got bigots in high places who give us bad projections and make us spend tax dollars on their bigotry, then it becomes, well, it can kill a nation. It can kill many civilizations who've probably fallen from this same thing. What I told the screener I'd like to raise is, in Iran, over 20 years ago, it may have been as long as 25 years ago, when Reagan and the first Bush were in power, there was what was called the Iran-Iraq War. And it was a product test war where the U.S. was selling weapons to both sides and testing out how well our U.S. weapons were working when we sold them to different countries. And during that war, we were testing out a radar system called AWACS, and we accidentally shot down an Iranian jetliner with, I don't know, 300 passengers on board or something like that. We killed everybody on board. This plane took off, and bam, all of a sudden everybody's dead. So the United States government, this anniversary just happened over the weekend. There was, you know, in Iran, of course, they long for their dead relatives. But the United States government has never paid back or even apparently talked about this incident in public, because when the press secretary, Dana Perino, was asked about it the other day, she couldn't admit that the United States had ever talked about it, so we couldn't acknowledge it. And, of course, we've never paid these people back. We've never paid the airlines back for the loss of their plane, and we've never paid the people back for the death of their relatives. And of course, the AWACS weapon system is still faulty and still in use. So this incident, when we start demanding that Iran behave in one manner or another, and we have murdered 400 of their citizens in total peace, becomes such not only an insult, but it becomes a it's an amazing scandal. And when you look at it from the concept that bigotry put us into that position to begin with, bigotry used as an excuse to steal their oil, and we can take some of the most ancient cultures in the world, and we can take, you know, biblical scholars couldn't decide whether or not the Garden of Eden was in Ethiopia or in Iraq, between the Tigris and Euphrates. And we would use that bigotry to blast apart the Garden of Eden, and neocon religious nuts would actually endorse blasting apart Eden in some sort of bizarre apocalyptic vision that if we kill the planet, we'll speed up the apocalypse and then Jesus will come here and rescue us, and the angels will be slaves cleaning up the mess. So I'm just thinking in terms of how expensive bigotry is and how many headlines are led by such bigotry.
David, thanks for your comments. I'll just toss this out to either one of my guests if either one of you care to respond to that or expand on it, or we can move on. I'll take that as a move on. Let's go next to, Phil in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Phil, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about the immigration problem, and that is I don't think the immigration problem can ever be solved as long as the corporations continue to go unpunished and making billions of dollars by hiring people they're paying far less for. There's always an incentive for any employer to hire the cheapest labor possible. And I think the way to solve the problem is to punish the corporations. And there are various ways of doing that. They always say, oh, well, we don't know who they are. Well, they do know who they are because they're paying them less. They can just look at the ones they're paying less than the minimum wage and with no benefits and et cetera. So I just don't understand why we keep talking about this subject and no one ever goes to the point of the people that are making the profits from these poor people that are being hired here. If we need them for our workforce, we should make them citizens and let them work here.
I'd like to tap into that.
Sure, go ahead.
Bill's point there. And that I think this in comparison and to the first Mike who answered the phone, right, who called in, you know, had said the point is and then made, you know, a point about I went through the process and others aren't. But I think this caller really speaks to the fact that, yeah, part of the reason immigration is such a tough issue for both candidates and for the country is because so much is loaded into it, if you will. There is that very, you know, law and order, I went through the process, you should too. Or there is a process, everyone should follow it. But there's also, what Phil's talking about, there's an incentive. If there weren't jobs here, people would not be coming. There's very real economic issues that a lot of companies, that we have some laws on the book, but clearly, as the caller alluded to, there's ways around them. That companies hire undocumented workers and because it's profitable to do so. In some instances, because U.S. American citizens won't take the jobs at the wage rate offered. And that's when we tend to see these really, really, you know, ugly, more values-oriented, this group is, quote-unquote, taking over my community. And so I think the immigration issue is so difficult because it's about all these things. And like the caller, I think that the economic incentives to hire undocumented workers by companies is really left out of that debate oftentimes. But it speaks to why immigration is such a hot-button issue right now. If it was just about how many people were in the country, people wouldn't care that much. It's when it taps all these other things that passions start to get going.
Professor Espino, would you like to comment on this as well?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Professor O'Brien has just said. I would also add that what the caller is alluding to is what the politicians are failing to talk about, and it implicitly allows other people, other groups, to turn the discussion of immigration and economics into a zero-sum game. Right. So when Professor O'Brien is saying, let's not get values, you know, involved in this discussion in appealing to the working poor, this is exactly why. Because once you start doing that, it starts pitting one segment of the working poor against another segment. So Latino working poor against white working poor against black working poor. And we're missing, you know, what's the underlying cause of our economic problems. It's not the working poor. It's the way many of our corporations treat their workers.
Well, it's much easier to blame the working poor for our problems. I mean, we had President Reagan and the welfare queens. You know, there's always somebody who we think is doing something to cause us to have a problem, and it's always been easier to blame someone else than to take responsibility for what we're doing as individuals.
Absolutely.
I want to go to James in Galena, Illinois, because I think he is going to ask a question that I wanted to ask next, and it's better if he does it than me. James, go ahead.
Hi, I'm James from Galena, Illinois, as you just said. Thanks for putting me on the air. I was a directing business representative with a machinist union for about 30 years. I'm now retired, 72 years of age, but I have seen 28 different corporations leave this country to go to Mexico, Brazil, China, and so on and so forth. Maytag being one of them out of Galesburg, Illinois, 4,800 jobs that moved to Mexico, $12, $14 an hour jobs, and when they got to Mexico, they were paying them $1.85. Right now, they're paying, Whirlpool bought Maytag, they're paying about $2 down there. So, leaving this country through NAFTA, thanks to Bill Clinton, and the Mexican people not getting any improvement in their living standards down there. They're still coming to this country because they can make $6 to $8 an hour up here below minimum wage, which is 3 to 4 times more than they make in Mexico. We just had a raid in Postville, Iowa up here just 2 weeks ago where they took 400 illegals out of there, out of the meatpacking plant. They were paying, the corporation was paying them less than minimum wage. They had them working more hours and not paying them overtime. So the corporations are taking advantage of these illegals. And unless we get the border closed and some of this thing corrected, it's only going to get worse. And it's not good for the immigration policy to have these poor people who need jobs to come up here and be, in my opinion, be raped by the corporations.
I would, I think James brings up both the incredible difficulty of this, and this is going to sound odd, but there is some opportunity in this. In that, you know, what he's describing is that the working poor in the United States and the working poor in Mexico and the working poor in India and all these other countries share a heck of a lot. Yes, they're making a little bit more money in the United States, but you know what? Those jobs are insecure. You're always looking behind your back in that, is this company going to go to a new country? You know, are they going to, is the job going to go there? Is the factory going to move to another place that will pay their workers still less? And in globalization, you know, we're getting more specialized in that, you know, country A tends to make widget A. and those, so what all that means is there is an odd opportunity for workers there. One, to see that, you know, that their difficulties are shared across border. And so it's not necessarily the Mexican worker versus the American worker versus the Indian worker. It's that we're all struggling against this system that isn't working for any of us, okay? So what's the recourse? And, you know, this comes out of some work by Francis Fox Piven and others, but there is recourse in the sense that to remove the cog from the machine, if you will, and especially in place with specialization, that if country A produces widget A and workers say, we're not going, then the world doesn't have widget A. Now, I know it sounds outlandish and all those other kind of things, but James puts forth very eloquently how difficult this is and how hard it is for the workers. And so if, in that context, there has to be some say, what power do poor people have? Some power does come from the numbers and the level of specialization that is going on with globalization. It's not a perfect system, but I think, or a perfect solution, I should say, but it's definitely something we can think about once we hopefully start to realize that it's not Mexican workers versus American workers versus Indian workers versus so on and so forth. It's that, hey folks, hey gals, all of us are suffering from this system.
And Professor Espino, I want to get your take on this too, but I'm really late for a break, so
sure.
I've got to get this done. And then when we come back, I want to talk about that. And then I had kind of a follow-up based on something that James said. So we'll keep this discussion going after the break. You're listening to All Things Political. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9:52, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Today, here's what's coming up next hour. We switch our attention to the arts, and specifically the state of the arts in Wisconsin. That's coming up next hour here on the Ideas Network. This hour, it's All Things Political for Monday, the 21st of July, and This hour, we focused a lot on immigration issues, and we just had another caller who was talking about that from the perspective of jobs are either here or they're somewhere else, and workers are going to go to where the jobs are. And But Professor Espino, I wanted to give you a chance to comment on that before we move on.
Yeah, sure. James brought up the word NAFTA, right? And I talked about how border security is a word that makes the hair on the backs of Latino voters rise. The same thing can be said for NAFTA. NAFTA symbolizes a lot of bad things for blue collar workers, the working poor. And so, both candidates are dancing around NAFTA and dancing around border security, but they, like Professor O'Brien mentioned, they need to see this as an opportunity rather than as something that they need to shun and avoid. So it maybe talk about how we need to revisit NAFTA, revise it in the era of global competition, rather than seeing Mexican workers and Mexico as competition, perhaps see it as an opportunity to revisit NAFTA to create a regional trading bloc, much like the European Union has done in incorporating, the Eastern Bloc. Maybe we can start doing that with Central and South American countries to create a strong regional economic power, because a lot of these jobs that these companies are not just shifting to Mexico anymore. They're shifting their plants to Vietnam, Thailand, China, because even though we have the proximity of the Mexican labor force, the rise in the living standards for the Mexican population has made Mexican workers actually more expensive than shipping companies overseas to, say, China, Thailand, or Vietnam. So perhaps this is, like Professor O'Brien said, rather than run away from the discussion of NAFTA and globalization, both candidates should see this as an opportunity to make certain appeals to the working class in this country.
Well, I want to toss this out to both of you, and this may be a little off topic for all things political, but I look at the globalization of the economy, and I ask, okay, where's the globalization of the workers? We still have workers in one country pitted against workers from another, and Professor O'Brien, I believe you touched on this earlier, but where's the globalization of labor in all of this?
Well, that's exactly the issue in my mind. That's exactly the issue. That's trailing. But to allude to what Professor Espino just talked to and what I said earlier, that there is opportunity there. Globalization, is not. We're not going to put the reins on it anytime soon. And in light of that, that there's a sense that workers, instead of, it's much like African Americans versus whites versus Latinos in the United States. Well, that's ridiculous, right? And we're starting, hopefully, most of us to realize that. Well, the same holds for global labor, that everyone's being pillaged by the system, and we're seeing the wealth go to the very, very top and nowhere else. So how do workers start to look across borders to friends as opposed to across borders to, put up their arms and fight, if you will?
So do we need the Wobblies to come back with Workers of the World Unite, or...?
Yes, at many levels, and many there are organizations doing that. But as a political scientist, I know that there's a battle fatigue, that poor people in the United States and across borders have very low feelings of efficacy. They don't feel governments will respond to them. It happens to be higher in the United States than some other places. But so the idea of let's unite. People sort of grin or they sort of smirk sometimes or, oh, yeah, another pie in the sky kind of thing. That's another challenge that these mobilization efforts have to face. But when they're using the language of you're struggling every day, you're not sure if you're going to be able to feed your family, you're not sure whether you're going to stay in that house, that language can resonate.
Let's we'll get in one quick call here from Ruth in Beloit. Ruth, I'll take your call, but you've got about 30 seconds to ask your question.
All right. excuse me. I don't have a question so much as I want to talk about that everyday issue for the poor. I work for a church, and I hear their stories every day. They work for job services, and they only get part-time jobs, and they're laid off before the time to hire. Affordable housing, Section 8, has been cut drastically. A story I heard yesterday is 300 on the waiting list. Meanwhile, they're staying in motels, asking for money.
Okay, Ruth, your point's taken. We're out of time. I just want to give Professor Espino, why don't you speak to that very quickly? We're almost done here.
Certainly. The rug is being pulled out. The economic safety net that has supported workers, especially workers in an economy that's going through transition. So what Ruth is pointing out is that workers are feeling the pinch in their pocketbooks because we're pulling the rug out from under them, that net that supports them, not that supports them perpetually, but that supports them from job to job to job when our economy is transitioning like it is right now. And both candidates need to talk about that and send a message to voters that they care about that and they're going to do something about that.
Professor Espino, Professor O'Brien, thank you both for joining me this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's All Things Political, another hour in the books here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour, it's the arts. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning. Thanks a lot to her for all her hard work. Stick around. We'll be back after the news. We'll discuss something about the arts, and we'll find out how they're doing in the state of Wisconsin. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network.